Good afternoon, good evening.
Hello, good afternoon.
How are you?
Pretty good.
Do you like the class today?
I didn't get to be there.
I did notice.
I had a luncheon with several ladies today that I had to do, and
you're entitled.
I'm sorry, what?
I said you're entitled.
I'm invited to what? Tony helped me prepare the dinner, so it was easier. It was easy. So Judy was explaining her new business to us, and so I tried to help her along with inviting some ladies to come and hear her presentation. And,
hopefully so, it was successful.
Yes, I think so. I think it is. And I'm happy to see her blossoming, you know,
right,
into something, you know.
Absolutely. It's part of the recovery.
Didn't like missing, you know, didn't like missing the class, but it's like lately that's what I have to do. And I probably will miss most everything through Wednesday because between Tony and I, we have two doctor appointments every day. And then they're going to give me another test of a nerve block again in the middle part of my back Wednesday. And I have a physical Wednesday morning. So, you know, and then hopefully, I think after the 4th of September, I'm through with all these checkups that come around every 6 months and you go every week, every day, just about. So. That might be somebody
Malcolm.
Else. Oh,
Malcolm.
Hi, Malcolm.
Hello.
Good afternoon. Good evening.
Good evening.
So we can begin. I think we are on Chapter 20, Section 2.
Okay, I'm going to mute.
Does everybody agree? Okay, I guess we agree.
Yes.
So I'll start with the Lashem Yehud. The chapter title is Men Not Women Reincarnate. Lashem Yehud Kudsha Barichu Lishkinte Bidkilu Urchimu Udkilu Udkilu Urchimu Leyakta Lashem Yudhe Bubathe Yehuda Shalim B'Shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah La'asok Torah Mitzvah Vayihino amadinai Elohimu aleinu ma'asei yadenu kurenei aleinu ma'asei yadenu kurenehu. As we have said earlier, principally the concept of Gilgul Malka, would you mute your phone? Because I'm getting some feedback. I appreciate it. If it doesn't work, it'll... Thank you. As we said earlier, principally the concept of Gilgul applies to men and not to women, since the latter are punishable in purgatory in the world to come, which is not the case for men who learn Torah. And that's also applied to women in our generation, since they are learning Torah as well. They will no longer be able to avoid reincarnation, but that's just my opinion. Continuing to read, Shmuel Vital, the Rabbi Chaim Vital's son, who redacted much of the teachings of his father, or notes from his father from the Ari's writings, Shmuel says, this is the secret revealed with me regarding the verse, Behold, Hashem does all these things with man two or three times. This is a verse from Job. It is the secret of Gilgul, as it says, with man. That is, with man and not with women. The secret of Gilgul is the letter Vav. The reason is because the secret of Gilgul is the letter Vav, which hints to the six spiritual extremities, Chesed, Geburah, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, and Yesod. They are the source above of the six directions below. The form of the letter Vav is as a line from top to bottom. This represents its connecting quality. It is also a prefix used to mean and it relates to Gilgul to show that all of the soul's lifetimes are interconnected and are actually an unfolding process of its abilities, and I would add, and of its spiritual growth. It also teaches partly why there is reincarnation, why one lifetime isn't enough to allow the soul to span all of creation in its relationship to its maker. And so one incarnation, the soul expresses a primarily chesed link of love above and to fellows. Another lifetime features a predominant geburah link of fear, with respect to which it says, 6 years shall you work, as mentioned in the Zohar. The work of the verse refers to the soul's labor of rectifying itself and the world through elevating the fallen sparks. The letter Yud hints to Galgal, to a wheel. Says Shmuel, it seems to me that the Yud refers to here is the last letter of the name Adonai. Therefore, Gilgal, which has a gematria of 66, is equal to this name with the Kolel. Adonai has a gematria of 65. When we add the Kolel, it becomes 66. And that's the gematria of the word Gilgul, or Gilgal, without the Vav. The wheel of life circles from death to life and vice versa. The form of Yud is a dot, which is conceptually a circle. The name Adonai enlivens Malchut, the last Sephirah that they all lead to. In turn, it ascends back up in a circle to bind with Keter, the highest Sephirah. And this is an expression of the wheel of life within the Sephirot. From this actually comes the wheel that we orbit in. The general idea behind this is that the soul toils through conceptual years of work, just as a slave labors 6 years. Though through that this, it eventually reaches Malchut, where the buck stops. Therefore, is it and the slave freed in the sabbatical. For Malchut ascends to Keter, the source of infinity and freedom. Shavuot, the sabbatical year, however, corresponds to Malchut and is thus feminine, and therefore does not reincarnate. As it says, in the seventh year, he shall go out for free. The Vav of Gilgul alludes to the sixth Sephirot of Zeranpin, the masculine Partsuf. Therefore, it is also an allusion to the fact that only men come back in Gilgul. Nevertheless, sometimes a woman will reincarnate for the sake of her husband, who must reincarnate, as mentioned in the Saba of Mishpatim on the verse, If he was married, then his wife will go out with him. My commentary. The commentary from Rabbi Auerbach in this section is not clear. The chain of lives can be a line that is straight or a line that curves into a circle. The chain of lives are all connected for an individual soul. Remember, a soul is both male and female. This chain of souls started with Adam and Cain and Abel, and will return to Adam after the Gemar Tikkun, the completion of the Tikkun. Yet this level of Adam before the sin is the concept of the chain of souls as a circle, or the Yud, as Rabbi Auerbach expressed. Yet this level of Adam is higher than Adam before the sin, since he will not have bread of shame. So it is a line leading back to the endless world, not a circle leading back to the endless world. All of this is confusing. Perhaps a verbal discussion will help. And there is also a question that was asked on the Kabbalah online website that I thought was worth discussing. Here it is. Out of curiosity, is reincarnation for women under the following circumstances? Thank you for your time. During one's lifetime, growth in mitzvot did not occur. But at the end of life, regret is expressed and indications of teshuvah are present. Number two, cases where, God forbid, the end of life occurs when one's children are younger, before bar or bat mitzvah, and or before the age for marriage. Three, a long lifetime with children was experienced, but said children, to be reincarnated, developed a strong bond with their mother. Four, involuntarily not having children occurred. Also the same question for voluntarily not having children. Five, living in a state where problems with family and our friends went unresolved, and being reincarnated could allow for a resolution to be reached. Six, a strong friendship was developed, and when the end of life is reached, one of the friends needs to reincarnate due to her husband, while the other friend doesn't wish to be separated by a lifetime. And here's the webmaster's response. Of your six cases, the only one I have ever heard about resulting in reincarnation for the woman is number five. Of course, I did not hear does not constitute a proof of anything. By the way, what is commonly misunderstood is that according to the masters in these matters, a period in Gehinnom is considered vastly preferable to the soul than reincarnation, which is spiritually risky. It is too early to mess up even more than previously. My commentary. The webmaster is correct that for a soul that has not studied Torah, a return to the physical world as a reincarnation will be spiritually risky. With the study of Torah, it is better and less painful to the soul to reincarnate. In fact, the teaching is that a student of Torah may not enter Gehinnom except for an instant to help and assist souls to leave Gehinnom. If the student of Torah cannot go to heaven, he will reincarnate either in the traditional concept or as an ibur to complete one of the mitzvot that he needs to complete. All six of these possible scenarios expressed as questions are essentially tikkun issues between souls. They can be corrected by physical incarnation of the male and the female taking a share of the tikkun of the whole soul, or they can be corrected through Gehinnom, as long as all four people actually cleanse through Gehinnom. These questions just do not have the background to truly understand reincarnation, since the questioner does not understand the laws of tikkun or the laws of reincarnation. That is the end of the section. Are there any questions? Giving you time to unmute your phones.
So our studies in the past is that the female chooses to reincarnate.
That's correct.
And are to be purified. And if they choose not to reincarnate, what happens to the soul? Do they just study Torah or study the Creator's words?
Well, if it's a male soul, that's what they do. When they're complete, they're studying the words of Torah that they revealed. I'm not sure. I've never heard anybody express what do women do in the time that they're not reincarnating.
Yeah, I don't remember every hearing what does a female soul do if she chooses not to reincarnate. I'm not sure. I know that we go to, you know, through a cleansing, Gehinnom, which could
right.
be, which you said is a good thing, to be purified. And once the
right.
soul's purified, I'm not sure what happens to that soul without it wanting to reincarnate back into the physical yeah. body.
It goes to the Garden of Eden.
Right.
And
so
it may go and study feminine things, feminine issues, feminine aspects of the Torah from teachers like Miriam or Sarah or Rachel or Rivka. Or Chava, or it may be doing other things. It's never made clear. But in my opinion, as I said earlier, in our generation, we know that women need to grow back to the level of the male, and so they may be doing that as part of being in the Garden of Eden. The only thing that the soul cannot do in the Garden of Eden that it can do in the physical body is do a mitzvah. And the mitzvah changes the soul. But if it's not doing the mitzvah, it does not mean it wouldn't change through the process of whatever is done to it and with it during the Garden of Eden experience.
Well, true. But going through Gehinnom, which cleanses and purifies the soul, right?
Correct.
Purifies all the filth, all the blemishes, I'll use that word, all the blemishes we've done to the soul, those are all purified. So we become a pure soul at that point.
Correct.
So, you know, I always say how wonderful it would be if I could study all day long, you know, without other things coming into the daily schedules. It's like I was sitting here thinking, so what happens if we don't want to come down? We've been purified. We have a clean soul. And we get a choice of doing and we're in Garden of Eden. Then what? I guess we'll know when we get there.
Ultimately, the female soul is going to choose to come down essentially in the last reincarnation for sure. Because the only way the male can complete that last reincarnation and achieve the tikkun of the last reincarnation is the female soul that is his other half is the only soul that can motivate the change that he has to go through. So if she doesn't come down, he never achieves the completion. So ultimately, she will come down. So that what is the time sense in the Garden of Eden that says, I don't want to come down this lifetime, but that 100 years is maybe just a second or two in the what she experiences in the Garden of Eden. We don't know what the time sense is like.
Right. So when you say that the women have to increase their elevation up to the male's elevation, can you kind of explain as to what that soul needs to do? It's whatever that male's tikkun is, as to what we need to do as a female soul to grow like into the man's.
You're doing it. You're studying the Torah. But
Okay. Go
back 500 years ago, go back 3,000 years ago, women didn't study the Torah. It was only in the last 500 years that women were educated. The whole idea of they started to set up in Eastern Europe and in the Muslim countries as well, I guess. I'm not sure about that. But in Eastern Europe, about 500 years ago, at the time of the egalitarian movement, and there was discussions and there were changes, and they set up schools for girls to go to learn to read, write, and study Torah. And they have a special name, but the name escapes me now.
So let's talk about our Sarah, Rachel, Leah, and the prophets. They could prophesy. So were their souls equal to the male souls at that point? They were on equal planes. They were equal in soul elevation because they were prophets, just as the males were prophets.
Prophecy is a lower level than Torah study. They're intertwined together, but they're on two different levels. Prophecy is said to come from Netzach and Hod, but what it's really saying is prophecy comes from Netzach and Hod of Atzilut, as we read a few months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas someone becoming a Talmid HaHacham, a wise person, He is at a higher level. He can reach the level of dots of Atzilut, which is what Moshe reached.
Okay. So Sarah, Rebecca, Leah,
they were better prophets. They were higher prophets than their husbands.
Right. But they weren't, their souls were not equal at that point because of the knowledge of their male counterparts.
Right.
But they were teachers to the women. They did teach the women.
Or the women taught them.
True.
Remember, God said to Abraham, listen to Sarah. She is more wise.
Right. Okay. Let's go a little further up the Sefer Yetzirah into Adam's before the sin. Was Eve, Ava, was she elevated as Adam was?
Yes, she was as elevated as Adam. First off,
before the sin.
I think you're buying into modern terminology when you say equal to, elevated as. You're buying into this to modern feminism that says that a woman should do everything that a man does. Whereas the role of women and men are different all throughout the centuries with Judaism. And this discussion and this disagreement has been going on for about 100 years or maybe more right now. So if you use the term a woman growing to be the level of the man, it implies that the woman was less than the man. But that's coming from the first chapter of Genesis, where God said to the moon, go diminish yourself. And the moon represents femininity.
Mm-hmm.
But before the moon, before the creation of Adam, the feminine was lowered. It was originally created equal. The sun and the moon were created equal. Now, we don't know what that means. Because if you look in the sky and you look at the sun and then you look at the moon, they appear to us to be the same size. So are we talking about size when we talk about that, the same level? It's not clear what we're talking about.
I don't know if this applies, but I remember maybe 4 or 5 years ago when we were in the Zohar Shalat Lakah, and I think it's maybe verses around 26 or so, it's not at the beginning, that different women studied Torah, and 3 times a day, like Matria, Moses comes with all these thousands of women souls. And I think, if I'm remembering right, that the women were lighter, had lighter garments than, I guess, well, naturally to Moses. Then there's a verse on Deborah. I don't remember which male teacher comes to her. I think Sirach was Joseph. But there are several women that are mentioned, and the male counterpart, the male sage that comes to study Torah with them 3 times a day.
Right.
But I think I remember the women's garments were not as bright as, I think, I don't know, it's been too long. Maybe the word was lighter. That's what comes to mind. And I do remember asking you, with my name Barbara, my given name has B-A-R twice, and even DeBartolo has B-A-R in it. And I ask you, because bar is the Aramaic word for son, which is Ben in Hebrew, did that mean I'm on the third reincarnation? I mean, Tony and I have been married 59 years, and there's no doubt in my mind that we're not soulmates. And I remember you told me, well, I asked the question, and I never have gotten any more concerning that. But I don't know if all that fits in our discussion, but that's what came to my mind.
It's part of the. It's definitely part of the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Because let me add something that's a little bit off of this. It's not really off the subject, but it's not a discussion about male and female. But in the study of 10 luminous emanations, what is discussed and the metaphor that is used to explain the spiritual principle, in order for Malchut to move to the next generation, in order for Malchut to go to create continuity, it must elevate back to Keter.
Mm-hmm.
That's what was being discussed in this section. The Malchut must elevate back to Keter. The reason for that is, in essence, Keter is, there's this discussion, is it light or is it vessel? So when Malchut elevates back to Keter, it now can become the Keter of the next generation. It can become the Keter with continuity. So the question is, you have a fruit that's now grown on the tree, and inside the fruit is a seed. But if that fruit falls to the ground, it rots. It does not germinate. It doesn't grow another tree. But if you take the seed out of the fruit and plant it in the ground, it will grow another tree. What's the difference? How is that getting back to Keter? And the discussion is that the atmosphere that it passes through, as you take it out of the fruit and put it in the ground, that atmosphere essentially is light. It's that by passing through the atmosphere, it connects to the Keter. That's essentially what we're talking about in a different framework.
Mm-hmm.
That the female, the moon was asked to diminish herself, which she did. And Isaiah prophesizes that the female, the moon, will grow back to the level of the sun. Now, haven't really defined what is levels here. We don't know what it means for the moon to grow back to the level of the sun. I've seen some scientific projections, fantasy discussions, that says that Jupiter is going to become a second sun, because it's almost the sun now, except it hasn't generated the fusion that it takes place in the sun. So it's everything's there, but it hasn't ignited, meaning it hasn't started the fusion process. And I don't know enough of the science to say, yes, that's true, it's not true. I'm just describing it. So again, we get back to what does it mean to be growing to a different level? Now, we can say growing to a different spiritual level, we can understand that. We can put it in physical terms, but knowing that we're discussing it in the sense of physicality, not spirituality. But you can see a person who has no control over his lusts. So he would, God forbid, rape a woman, but another person would never consider doing that. He knows it's incorrect, and he just doesn't allow himself to do that. So those are two different spiritual levels, and I've described them in terms of physicality. So, Malka, I'm not sure we're really addressing the question you want to get answered. But in order to answer it, we really have to define some of these terms, and we don't have the ability to do that.
Yeah, we don't know growing me in what aspect. Is it growing in knowledge? Is it growing into, like you say, becoming a keter of a world with the 10 sephirots in it? We don't know if it's sharing, like you said, fusing together. They will be two separate, I assume. I don't know.
Remember, the male and female were created back to back.
Right.
So we don't even know what that means. So we have all these descriptions, but until you have meditated and asked these questions within your meditation, where you're seeing pictures of things that give you the explanation, we don't have the tools to explain it.
Well, and I think back, this just came to thought. You know, it says like the Creator created in four different directions, north, south, east, west, and also up and down. So I wonder if that's possibly something to look at. I mean, if they're back to back, and in any direction you look, you will see the sun and the moon, you know, that would reign over. Always light, no darkness, always light. So I don't know.
Well, out of confusion comes clarity eventually.
Right.
I think one question you did ask in this last, soliloquy, the one question that can be answered is, are we talking about, how do you define a level? You're talking about level. Typically, we think in terms of level being wisdom. But it could be, as Kohelet wrote, Ecclesiastic wrote, that there's a time for everything under the season, a time to live, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to sow, and so forth. You have these 28 different times that are listed in Kohelet. I believe it's chapter 3 of Ecclesiastes. And so how do these three relate to each other? How do these 28 times relate to each other? And are we talking about the same levels, meaning that they're male and female represents the two sides of the 28 times? There's 14 pairs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very, we just don't have the information to give it clear definition.
I mean, even today, we do not have the clear definition. Is that what you're saying? Are we?
Correct.
Okay.
To be able to answer your question, we would need a clear definition of what does it mean for the moon to grow back to the level of the sun. Are we talking about light? Are we talking about the intensity of light? The frequency of light, light has attributes.
Mm-hmm.
Just as Hashem has attributes, just as snow has attributes. In Eskimo, there's 32 words for snow. You and I would say snow, and we know what we mean. But in Eskimo, because snow is so significant to their survival, they identify the difference in the snow, how wet it is, what's the moisture content. They don't do it scientifically, but they evaluate the way the snow comes down. They evaluate the way it turns into ice. They evaluate all these different things, and so they have 32 terms. If it's important to you, you specify different degrees. When it comes to spirituality, how do we define different degrees? Well, we have five names for the soul. Chaya, Yechida, Neshama, Ruach, and Nefesh. But we don't have five names for, we need 613 parts of the soul. So we name them from the body parts. There's 613 body parts. So we call the body part, we call the soul part by that same name. And we know we're talking about the spiritual level of the soul. So if I say the arm, and I'm talking about the spiritual level, we all know what I'm talking about when I say arm at the spiritual level. Now, we've never seen it, at least most of us haven't seen it, but we can conceive of what we're describing, and that's the way the Kabbalists talk. That's the vocabulary that they use. What I just described is the language of branches. So what I'm really saying is we don't have the language of branches to discuss the attributes of what does it mean for the sun growing to the level of the moon. The level of the moon, or the moon growing to the level of the sun. But we normally think of that growth of the feminine growing to the level of the male being in the level of Torah study, being in the level of wisdom. But there's no guarantee that it's at that level. It could be in other attributes.
Well, like it was back in the when the prophets and the prophets were there, were with us, they, like Hannah just said, there were a lot of women that were higher I say higher, that were teachers. Let's just put that. They were teachers, and the men would come to the women to teach. Was that the men's tikkun? They were helping with that man's tikkun to get him to the level where he it was supposed to be?
Yes.
So, okay. But with the word of Hashem, go diminish yourself, on the female side, she may have had lighter garments, but she still was not at the growing level of the son, of the male aspect. So with her being the teacher to the male aspect, they were growing together to accomplish that tikkun, to be of the same growth.
The teaching relationship, the teacher teaches to a student, while the student, through the process of learning, is teaching the teacher. You don't understand the subject unless you can teach it. And when you teach it, and you see the way the student is learning it, and you say, well, the student hasn't learned this, I have to rearrange it, I have to present it differently, the student is causing you to learn. So there's always a circuit of energy between a student and a teacher. Now, I think Hannah described, and as I remember it, it was the men were coming to the women three times a day to teach Torah, to elevate the wisdom. But as they would teach, they were learning from the teaching. They were learning from teaching the student. The student was teaching the teacher. And even though we don't have an answer, and it's not clear right now, we know at some point it will become clear. As you enter into the discussions, as you grow spiritually, these things will become clear to you. And to me at the same time, or at different times.
I guess my circumstances are, I mean, you're teaching us, but we that are in this class are seeking, I speak for myself, just let me speak for myself, are seeking for our male counterparts to teach us. I mean, they do teach us certain things about, you know, our physical life. But as far on a spiritual level, I desire to have the male counterpart teach. And these days, I find that I am not encountering a whole lot of male spiritual teachers. Other than going to speak, we have our, you know, devices, you know, and thank goodness for that, for Hashem for that. But I mean, just in our communities and as a whole, you know, we don't have that.
And see, I find
now
it's sort of a different aspect to that.
25 years ago when I came to the synagogue, there were no male teachers. And, you know, when I picked up the call to teach, there were times that I felt that there was somebody that could do it better than I could. But I'd hear the voice, but there's no male that wants to pick it up. And that went on until about 3 years ago. And now we have some wonderful male teachers. And I can now, you know, come out and be happy, you know, that somebody else is doing the job. That's why, and I love to teach, don't get me wrong, but I just, there are things that my husband does. I don't want to have to do that. I don't know what growing to be the level of a man is, because he has some gifts and, you know, that I think are wonderful, and but he's still different than me, and I'm different than him. You know, so I don't know that I want to grow to his, whatever that means, to his level. I think we each have, you know, Hashem gives each of us gifts, and I think when we're fulfilling the calling for those gifts that he's given us to share with others, then maybe that's what the level is. Not so much that we're going to be on the same level spiritually, or, you know, I mean, if I took a little every day, that I don't like, I wouldn't want to go out and cut grass, you know. And at the same time, I don't think he likes cleaning toilets and bathrooms and, you know, so. And yet there were times when we had the babies and we took turns, because we had one of our children that just never slept. And so he'd take Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night, and I'd take Tuesday, Thursday. And the next week, we'd switch. And that's how we got sleep, through one of our children that had an allergy to milk. You know, I don't know if that's making sense, but I don't think growing to the level of the male means that we're identical. I think it's just using the gifts that God has given us that we're each to share. I mean, you know, we're all different, and we're different for a reason. Because that's the way God created us.
I guess my thoughts are, I'm not trying to be, I just want to learn, even though I cannot partake, let's just say the kohenim, you know, the temple services and stuff like that. I know I cannot partake in that other than being, you know, sacrifices and bringing, you know, those sorts of things. But my mind would like to be open to understand the process, even though I don't do it or can't do it. I like to learn everything there is to learn, it be male or female, as to what the process is, to understand, even have the compassion for the male side, the male soul, have compassion to know what the male soul goes through, just as I would like for the male soul to have compassion on the female soul. Just to know, so that we could intermingle and feel the things that a person goes through. I guess that's the knowledge that I am, I guess, interested in. I mean, I want to know everything that I could absorb, it be male or female, I want to absorb it so that I can see a person and say, oh my goodness, you know, the males, you know, they feel this, you know, they see it in this way, they, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm not trying to compete. And like you say, you don't want to compete, because there's some things that, you know, women just don't care to do. But if I had to step in, if it had to step in and do something because of a situation, it would make that male figure feel that, you know, that's getting done. And my wife or my female part of my life is helping me, you know, to where I don't feel anguish and, you know, upset, and that, you know, I'm there for them just as he's there for me, you know, that sort of thing. That's right or wrong, that's how I feel.
I remember the other day when we discussed the meaning of Chavon, which basically is every day with whatever situation you're in, whether it's with a male or female, whether you're studying by yourself, whether you're with a teacher, that at that point, you have every step of every minute of every day, of however your day goes, and whoever you encounter in that day, it's what I'm seeing is that you have decisions to make whether or not you're going to choose to be positive. I can't remember how we worded it the other day, that Hashem would be the one aspect that's facing us as we make that decision. And so to me, that's brought a lot of peace with me. It's also helped me with minding while sizing. And it's hard to put into words.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're both getting to the same place of it's hard to put into words. Malka, you've been describing a lack that you are feeling. You've been describing a lack that says it can only be fulfilled by a male teacher or a teacher to teach you the male ways. A teacher does not have to be the essence of the subject, but the student, in order to feel the experience of the subject, has to do something experientially. And that experientially is meditation. That experientially is to actually do the action. It is the only way to feel what you are being taught. And that class, that subject, is the class of Sefer Yetzirah. And the essence of that class is, here is the material, now you go do it. Then come back to the teacher, and because the teacher has experienced those same things in their learning, the teacher can help guide you. But it is no longer intellectually giving you material to learn. It's now you experiencing the process of learning it. And if those words are not clear, and they may not be, all I can say and all that I know to be true is that you have to go through the experience, which means to do the meditation, which means to experience the meditation. I know, Malka, you never went through the first class with us in any way unless Hannah taught it when she taught you. But the idea of the difference between knowledge and experience. If you haven't experienced that, if you weren't taught that specifically, go listen to some of the recordings from the basic class number one. Because what is being taught there, and I know I've given you that image, that metaphor of somebody dropping the pen, will it fall to the table? And the answer is, of course it'll fall to the table. And then the question is, well, do you know it will fall to the table, or do you believe it will fall to the table? And the answer is, I know it will fall to the table. And then the question is, how do you know? And that's how you arrive at this understanding between what is experience and what is intellectual understanding. You experience your feelings. Intellectually, no one else can understand your feelings. But another person who has experienced something similar can get closer to understanding your experiences because they've done that. They've experienced it something similar.
That's what I meant when I said...
Go ahead.
You had a... When I said that at the time I felt others would do a better job than I could do, but yet nobody else would pick up the reins to do it. And that's what I feel like she's experiencing. And I feel like her age now is the generation rising up to take my generation's place. So I'm not surprised she's experiencing the same thing.
I agree with you, but
and
I'll
see the more hunger you have, the more hunger that you have, the harder your experience is for you. You know, you can't understand why others don't have the same. Hunger, and if you're in a community where others aren't, you know, you do have those feelings, but but I do agree with what you said with the Yetzirah.
Well, you've had a few of those classes, Hannah, so you've had that experience a little bit.
Right. And I'd love to get back. I had 15 of them, but I can't find time to work anything else in. And it'd be different if your classes were reteaching the same thing. But everything is, it's almost new. And when I miss a class... like I said, I don't know what you taught this morning. I went to look to see if the recording was available because I had 2 hours before this class. It's what?
It's not yet. I haven't put it up yet.
Okay. So, you know, so I didn't know what it was. So I couldn't, I couldn't spend time going ahead and reading it or whatever. But I will understand what she feels, but I think you take it day by day, and what she's gotten so far, to me, she's grown super fast. I'm not worried about her.
I was rethinking. I read an article, I guess it was yesterday, about Moshe and about the generation that came up after his generation that had moved on, and the children were going to go into the land. And this statement, and it's probably not word by word, but the statement was is that Moshe was having a difficult time identifying with the new generation because he knew all he knew was the generation, not all that he knew, but he could identify with the generation that had passed prior to them. So it was time for a new leader to come in with this new generation mm-hmm. so that they could identify. And, you know, Moshe was comparing them to their father's sins. And
right.
he was, you know, rebuking them. And it really took me back. You know, it's like, oh, my goodness. Like Hannah was saying, I think that's where I am today, is that identifying with this new generation. And I am somewhat concerned about the teachings of the Torah. And like she said, we do have some young, intelligent men coming up in the synagogue that we go to that are ready to take the reign, and they're really knowledgeable with the Torah. And they're converts, you know, of course. And I think that's probably where I'm having the issue. I'm wanting a more dominant male generation of teachers, you know. And but I think I can identify a little bit better as to what's going on with me and my mindset because of what I read the other day. And it was really, and I was seeking those answers to somewhat. And I don't know, maybe I'm just concerned about the generation coming up I'm just not seeing it a big advance in that. I'm not seeing the teachers that should be there other than what I see at the synagogue, you know.
Well, have you not thought that maybe it's another wave and that it's not going to be synagogue life?
Well, this is true. This is very true, yeah. Because I think we have talked about that a little bit, about the participation in the synagogues, and the young children are not there. You just see the older generation and some of the newer generation, but not young children in the synagogue.
Well, that's not true in the
okay.
larger cities.
Mm-hmm.
Judaism has always been, since its exile, Judaism has been nurtured in the cities. When we went back to the land, we nurtured it with the kibbutzim. And one of the discoveries that came out of the teaching of the kibbutzim was they realized that most of the generals in the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, came out of the kibbutz. That the kids mm-hmm. were set in a place of competition to such an extent that they had no idea that there was another way. And so they all, you know, whenever there was, you know, something going on, they all strived for it. They all competed against each other. And the result was that they lost a lot of the kibbutz children vis-a-vis relative to the city's children. And today you don't hear much about the kibbutzim. The kibbutz is not the engine of economic growth in the land of Israel today, or as it was in the 50s and 60s.
Right.
So society is going through changes there in Israel and here as well. You know, I had a discussion the other day, you're going to laugh, because everybody thinks tradition is such a wonderful thing, that we need the tradition. You know, you need to go to synagogue on Rosh Hashanah to hear the shofar. That's the tradition. And statistically, and what we're finding is if you learn tradition without the explanation of why, tradition is the first step towards assimilation. Because the next generation learned the tradition, but they don't have the same feeling about it that the first generation did. And
true.
Over time, people move away. And you get to a situation of assimilation, which has been ongoing for the Reform Movement for 400 years, since the beginning of the Reform Movement.
Mm-hmm.
And it's reinvigorated constantly with converts. Well, where are those converts coming from? The 10 lost tribes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not something you need to worry about. What's going to come up, what you're going to see happen is each generation will find its own path, because each generation has its own tikkun to do. And you may find that the strength of the power, I think it was, you didn't use the word power, you used something else to describe the male teacher. You really have to look at what is the lack that you're feeling. Because you may find that the female teacher is a better teacher and more effective and will get across to you what you're feeling a lack of. And as Hannah said, what I teach is constantly new. But there are some parts of what I teach that we have not gone back over it. We don't go over we haven't finished sections of the Zohar. Complete Parasha on the Zohar. So we've never gone back over those things. But in reality, that's the only way we learn Torah, is that repetition. Every year we go through the same cycle. Well, we read the same surface level, but the inner essence is in the Zohar, and we haven't finished it yet. So that's why it's always feeling new. And when you meditate, every experience is new. And every experience is similar and different, all at the same time. So I hope we haven't confused things too much today.
No, I don't think so. I think we needed this to come out. And I think it sticks with us as we walk through a day. And then we find ourselves in an experience, and then we realize, oh, that applied to that. Or you just ponder it for a while, and then you kind of forget about it, and then it pops up again, and it relates right to the discussion. And most of the time, you remember the voice of whoever said it. You know, like if it's something you've said, or if it's something Malka has said. Like a couple of weeks ago, she told me, well, if I were you, I would pick up the volume of Pimpus and I'd put it in my lap. I'd hold it. I would do it, you know. Okay, well, I mean, I study Zohar every time I get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, which is most of the time that I get awakened. And lo and behold, the other night, I stayed up from 3 to 5 and read in Pentecost verses 29 through the chapters 29 through 31. And I wanted to pick up the phone and call you at 4 o'clock in the morning, because when I reached one paragraph that I just couldn't grasp, and, you know, it was all about resurrection and where the soul is and, you know, what's going to get resurrected first, that when we die a physical death, our spirit's taken away first, but then whenever we are resurrected, it's the bones that get started first. And then, hold on just a minute.
I'm going to be a Sarah Hartnett.
Okay, tell her I'll call her. Okay, about 10 minutes. And, oh gosh, I lost my train of thought.
You were talking about the resurrection, yeah. And the bones were first.
Right, and then it began to relate the bones to the body parts and all. So, see, just that one thing she said, it just led me to thought, I'm going to sleep with the Pentecost volume in my arms. So I think that's what happens, is as we have these discussions, and then you may not think about it for a while, and then that person's voice will come in your head who spoke it, whether it was your teacher or it could have been just a person or something on television, and it flashes back. So I think all the conversations that we have are meant to be. So
I agree.
And I have a feeling when you first started out, you had the same feelings that I just said that I had when I was starting to teach, and just couldn't understand why, because there were a couple of people who really knew Hebrew. They had been born in Orthodox cities up north, and they were well capable of teaching. And here was someone who was basically...
In the Kabbalah Center, half the students are Israeli, and they speak Hebrew literally. That's their first language. And I would come into a class, and I would present something that just, to me, was natural. You know, it's a question about the Hebrew language or the Hebrew words, but, you know, they were never taught to permutate the letters. So they never saw what was there. And, so I'd walk in and I'm teaching them because I'm permutating the letters. But then, a month later, they're out, you know, just bypassing me. Which is great.
Right.
Because this is a great tool. I'm permutating the letters. And all of a sudden they were seeing things in the old that they never saw before. But this is the way of people learning.
No matter what you study on your own or whatever you learn, whatever Hebrew word you learn, no one can take that away from you. You know, that's yours. You may have had to struggle, you know, because you were by yourself, or maybe you were the only, it was just you.
And one day down the way, you'll just be so glad you did. I mean, the way I basically had taken a Hebrew class while there was a rabbi, and then for 8 years we didn't have a rabbi. And so it was by reading the Amidah every day, the Amidah, taking a paragraph at a time. And when I learned that little paragraph, I went to the, you know, then I'd read the rest in English. Then when I get to the second paragraph in Hebrew, when I got that down, I'd read the rest in English. And that's how I kept up and was able to not lose the 1 year that I had with Hebrew. And I'm even seeing, like, with the Sweet Coat Service, for the longest, I had a hard time keeping up with your speed, but I'm seeing I'm doing much better now, and it's because of that practice every day. And the other night, when I sat to read the Zohar, usually I scan, you know, I'll read the first word, and I'll read the last word, but I'll, you know, scan. And I didn't scan. I read every word. And like you, there were some words I wasn't sure, but there were sure a lot of words I knew. By ourselves or with a teacher? You guys, you grow. Okay. I said whether it's with a teacher or by yourself.
Right.
It's still yours.
Yes.
And sometimes I think the harder you have to fight for something and struggle for something. I mean, look, the night that, well, Wednesday night, we had the discussion of how hard the Tikkuni Zohar was. I told you I hadn't been getting hardly anything from it. And I was starting to get discouraged. And then the very next day, what happens? It was like it was, not only was there a mix, there was so many words that were just like Hebrew words. And the English was like English. Just, you know, and I couldn't get over it. Just from one night to the next day, the difference. And I thought, well, that's the example. How you said it, confusion is just a step away from clarity. And
yeah,
so I think when you stand...
Clarity.
Mm-hmm. And so anyway. Well,
so,
that call
no,
I just got was Sisterhood President, so I'm going to have to... I have a feeling I know what they want. Oh, what are you going to make for... So I probably will have to hang up and not hold her too much because she's a very busy lady.
Malka, do you want to continue our conversation?
Well, just a quick statement. Do you think, you know, I'm going to delve into more of teacher, you know, really study more of that. But do you think that since we... or wanting our desire to have a more of a male presence. We are male and female. So is it because we're pulling our male souls out of us to since we don't have that we ourselves, our individual selves, are pulling out the male aspects of our soul to teach ourselves? Just as you said that you taught the permutation of the letters in Kabbalah, were you pulling out your female side of the soul to have them, the males, grow into their level of teaching? Because most students, once they teach, sometimes become better teachers than us. I'm aware of that. But are we pulling out each part of the soul when we... the necessity of that aspect comes to us?
There's two ways of understanding it, and even your question isn't really clear, because are you talking about you know, in this conversation, you kept referring to the male counterpart, whereas the proper term is soulmate.
Okay.
But it's uncomfortable. But it's uncomfortable because soulmate has been bandied about for in our lifetime, so that we really don't know what it means. But and when you're asking me about male counterpart of your soul or my female counterpart, are you referring to the soulmate that isn't in my life? Or are you talking about what psychology says, everybody has the opposite sex within their personality? So I have a female aspect of myself, and you have a male aspect of yourself. So I'm not sure which you're asking about.
To the soulmate side, you know, not.
Yeah. Now, so when you talk about the soulmate or the counterpart, as you were using, what you're really describing is you're not separated from your soulmate. On the physical level, the person isn't in your life, or maybe is, but I don't know. I don't even know if you're married or what your relationships are. But it's not that important to this discussion, and which you would think it would be. But your soulmate, you are constantly in contact with your soulmate. Every night, there are aspects of your dreams that you don't remember that are between the two of you. Not the intimacy or any of that, but you're sharing each other's lives. And so when you come back to Earth in the morning, you're bringing some of those stories with you. And yes, it's coming out of you, and you're then using it as teaching systems and teaching mechanisms. But you're thinking in terms of what you've been taught from our society, and you're thinking in terms of physicality. You're limiting yourself to understand how this all relates. You and your male soulmate are in constant communication, but it's not on a physical level. And if you're feeling lack of that, go ahead.
So are you telling me at this point that I am being taught by my soulmate?
Absolutely.
Almost
every night.
Okay. Now that makes a lot of clarity for me. Okay. That makes a lot of clarity for me. So basically I am being taught from my soulmate.
And you're teaching him. And you're teaching him as well.
Okay. I get that. Okay. And maybe that's what I was after all this time. I was just going about it in different terms, as you said.
It's utilizing the terminology. You have to use the terminology correctly. And it's hard to do so because, you know, I didn't correct you from the beginning, but it was in the back of my mind. I was hearing you say male counterpart, and I wasn't clear on what you were saying, so it was my fault for not clarifying that. But anyway, at least we got to where you needed to get.
Right. That's exactly right. Okay. That definitely clarifies a lot for me.
Good. So you have a good evening.
Okay. Thank you both.
And hopefully we'll see each other We'll speak to each other tomorrow night or tomorrow day, whichever.
Okay.
For me, it'll probably be tomorrow night. Okay.
Shalom.
We have a class in the morning.
Yes. Yes, that is the plan.
Okay, great.
We had one today, but nobody showed up.
Yeah,
and I'm not criticizing. I'm just describing.
Well, I am so sorry. I've had company since Thursday, and they just left right before I got on the call. So sorry. I did get on about 9:16, and no one was on. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I listened to the music for I think 11 or 12 minutes, and then I went and did it myself. But, you know, we'll do it again tomorrow.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay,
you
thanks.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.